How's it going, everyone? Welcome back to another edition of That Mill Podcast. Hope you're doing well. Post-mortem after the FA Cup third round tie at the weekend, which saw Millwall lose 2-1 to our nearest and dearest South London rivals, Crystal Palace. Joining me as always, I've got myself Omer, joined by Mr. Mickey Simpson. Hello, pal.
Hello, fella. You all right?
All right. I think I've just recovered from the weekend's antics, but, you know, we live in
The voice is still a bit croaky, but we'll be all right. Yeah. So, yeah.
We're here to tell the tale anyway. And obviously joining us, as always, is Mr. Kai Bennett. Hello, pal. You all right?
I'm good, thank you, man. I'm a bit confused with this setup because normally you're on the left and Mickey's on the right, but I'm looking a bit of the way today.
Do you know what's even
normally,
worse?
I'm normally first into the call, and I think Mickey beat me to it today. So that's why he's on the left. So,
and also, that's just going to really confuse people who only listen to us on a podcast. I wonder if I can...
That's
there you
better.
You fix yourself.
There you go. Is that better for you?
That is much better for me. Thank you.
Yeah, we're back to ordinary now anyway. But obviously, talking about today's, in today's show, we'll be talking all about Saturday's defeat in the first part. And then in the second part of the show, we'll do a general misc catch-up and some transfer rumours, along with a bit about the 23s who played earlier today. So we'll go into part one now and be back shortly. And welcome to the first part of the show. As mentioned, chaps, I think we're going to talk all about Saturday's game against Crystal Palace, which saw Millwall lose 2-1 after going 1-0 up in the first half. Kai, I always come to you first for a bit of a recap on the game. What did you make of it on Saturday? How was the day in general for you? And obviously losing the game in the end, but I think we come out of that with our heads held high, I think, in the end.
Definitely. Like, despite the result, probably, you know, I think the crowd showed it at the end, didn't they, with the songs they sang at the end, you know, "We Love You, Millwall." I think Millwall were excellent on Saturday. I think we were really unlucky. On another day, we take that to extra time or even win it in normal time. I think 15 minutes of the second half was the only point where Palace actually looked a Premier League side. And for me, without them 15 minutes, I think we probably see the game out 1-0 or even go on to get a few more. I mean, the first goal, talk about this as well, is that Mateta was supposedly offside, which is frustrating that there's no... I know we haven't got VAR at the Den, but if you're going to have VAR in some FA Cup matches, I think you've got to have them in all, in my opinion. But yeah, that's the only thing that annoyed me a little bit about the game. But other than that, I thought Anthony Taylor managed the game really well. I thought he let the game flow, which is what you need in a derby. The worst thing you can get is a referee that's going to stop start. And I thought he managed the game well. And I thought we put in a really good, showed a really good account of ourselves. So yeah, I was pleased with the performance.
Whilst it weren't pretty, I suppose, Mickey, I mean, like we both said there, you know, we walked out of the game with our heads held high, albeit obviously 1-0 up. I think, you know, I said it to you on the day and I've said it since to countless people when I spoke about it. I just think we scored too early in the game, Mickey. And I think that's a conscious thing about our squad where we're 1-0 up, 15, 20 minutes into the game and, you know, got half time. And I always just think it like there must be something about this side where we're just in some way or another. We score early in games, we try and see a game out and defend it. And obviously, you know, Crystal Palace and Elise in particular, they had another story to tell about that one, didn't they, on Saturday?
Yeah, no, I agree. I sort of agree with you. I think, you know, if you're 1-0 up and you're going at half time, you sort of either you sort of up your own arse to a degree, thinking, oh yeah, we could get this. We're beating the Premiership side, blah blah. And then you come out, it's as if like they had tea and cake at half time, and they come out and thought, well, we're just gonna, you know, let the food go down before we have a runabout again. And look, you know, as much as we fucking can't stand Palace, they showed really what, you know, that they're class players. They are a Premiership side, for fuck's sake. And for 15 minutes, that showed. And then we got back into the game. And that's the unfortunate bit, is that if it wasn't for that 15 minutes, we would have probably still took it to the gut. We would have still took it to them. Yeah, everyone's saying, you know, it's offside. Whether or not it is or it isn't, it got given. So that sort of made our heads drop as well. And I think that was a problem. Our heads dropped for that 15 minutes. They scored another. And then trying to get back into it, we started, but nothing was really going our way, was it? We were having chances, but we just couldn't fucking get the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, you know, initially going into the game, I think we kind of expected the lineup we got. Obviously, George Long was in goal, which was obviously an interesting one, but it's
it was
the top goalkeeper. And we'll talk about him obviously in more detail in a second. But obviously, Hutchison, Pierce, Cooper was the back three, Matt Namara, Scott Malone on the left with Murray Wallace not available. I guess he's had his baby by now, but his wife was expecting. Savile Mitchell played in the midfield with Ojo and Afobe either side of Tom Bradshaw. I say either side because obviously Ojo has played more than a 10, hasn't he, Kai, before Saturday. I feel like on the weekend it was more he picked up position on the right-hand side. I don't know if that's just me that thought that. But, yeah, I mean, the team we expected, and obviously first half we was on top of them, I felt like, and limited their chances quite well, pressed high up as we always tend to do so early in games. And obviously we got the goal through that with Afobe, you know, capitalising on Butler's mistake.
Yeah, we did, mate. Yeah, we did. And special mention for Saturday has to go out to Shea Ojo. I thought that was probably his best performance in a Millwall shirt. I thought, you know, you could see by the way that he got the standing ovation when he went off. You know, that's all you need to do as a Millwall player. He showed quality as well as the hard work and determination that we saw as well. He's putting his foot into challenges. And that's all we can ask. He gave 110% on Saturday. I'm quite a little bit disappointed he was taken off because I think he could have maybe affected the game from then. But it was good to see Nader Botic and Tyler Bury come on. I thought Tyler Bury looked really dangerous when he came on as well. I thought
Nader was good as well. I thought he'd come on and, you know, considering he's only a young lad, and I didn't realise he'd been with the club 10 years. He's been with the club since Tiny.
Am I the only one that walked out of there Saturday thinking he didn't touch the ball on Saturday, though?
He came close to that
crucial touch, but he didn't touch. I felt like he went missing. I know he's got a lot of praise from the 23s, and I know, Kai, you've seen more of them than me. He doesn't look out of place, you know, physique-wise, but I think, you know, he didn't have an impact on the game that I don't think we would have hoped
I agree,
it was refreshing to see him come onto the
I think
team.
It was nice that he came on. I think it was, you know, a good thing to do for a young kid. Show him a bit of loyalty that he's been there for 10 odd years and now he's got a place and the hard work's finally playing off. Yeah, you know, we'd probably have a different story. If he'd have scored that, if he'd have got a foot onto that and scored it, we'd be fucking singing up and down. But he did make, whether or not he touched the ball or not, I do think that...
I don't mean it in a critical way, by the way. I've heard people talk about it and I'm like, he didn't touch the ball in the game, I don't think.
I just think a presence on the pitch, he didn't look out of place. Do you know what I mean? We put some youngsters on sometimes and you can see that, you know, I mean, look what Morrison's getting slated for, where he put the youngster on and then took the youngster back off and slated him publicly about it. I mean, he's getting ruined over it. But I just think it was nice. It's just a shame, really, that we couldn't make the final. But look, some of the players, I agree with you. Ojo, I think Ojo was probably his best game in the shirt. Bennett, when he come on, was up and at them, really in their faces, really up for it. A few little tricks and traces. You know, you can see the skills on the fella. You can see what he's, you know, capable of if fair. And Long, from the first moment, mate, Long just looked so confident. You know, me and you were chatting, weren't we? But I just think Long just absolutely controlled. And there was a few shots what come in where if it was Bart would have punched him away. He was jumping up, catching the balls, playing him out. He's got a much better kick than Bart. I'm not saying Bart's got his place, but I think going forward, Long potentially is going to be our number one for the long term, because I think he's a great keeper. He showed, okay, fine, we lost 2-1, but I think he's got class building there.
Yeah, we said it obviously on Saturday. I think, you know, I agree with you about his kicking in particular, but I think he's one of those goalkeepers that strikes me as very cocksure. Like, he's very, like, he knows his ability, which can be a downfall at times. I think there was one moment in his first half where he's gone to clip the ball over from a goal kick. He kind of hurried it, and I think Eze intercepts it. And it could have been, you know, one of those things where if Palace were on it that day at the time, could have been punished by it. But I 100% agree. Like, he's very confident in his ability, which is obviously a good trait to have as a goalkeeper, I feel like. He strikes me as a little bit of, remember Dan Bentley? Is it Dan Bentley at Bristol City now, Kai? He's that kind of goalkeeper where he's like modern day, backs himself with his ability. And rightly so, because I think he's played like 100 games at championship level. He's played 45, I think, the year Hull went down. He's still only 28 years old. And I think I do agree with Mickey Day. He's kind of got that number one position in his kind of eye of sight, so to speak, going into the next couple of seasons for Bart, I suppose.
A bit controversial, and it's in no way, in any shape or form, criticism of him, because he's a good lad, he's a Millwall boy. But I do think the whole day possibly got to Billy.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to talk about that in a moment for about the second half in particular. But I mean, I agree with you. I think first half he played great. I think he was on it and he was getting the ball. I think he touched the ball the most out of all Millwall players on Saturday. I think I saw a statistic go around for that, and you can't knock him for that. I think second half, because he got the booking early doors and Savile went off injured, I think that definitely kind of contributing factor to it. We'll talk about obviously him in a minute and Danny Mack, because I thought Danny Mack was our player of the match on Saturday. But I mean, obviously, Afobe, we didn't talk about, you know, he closed Alf Button's goal, didn't he? And, you know, Kai, he obviously got the goal he deserved, I think, on the day.
Yeah, and I saw some stat the other day that said something like Bradshaw and Bennick have scored in the last six games between them or something. There's some stat that they've, between the two of them, they scored, either one of them scored in the last six matches or something, which is really good. And it just shows you that the format that the, you know, the two up top were, that they're building such a good, like, you know, partnership up there. And that's really important. And Bennick Afobe, obviously, he's only on loan, but it'd be brilliant to sign him a permanent deal. And hopefully we can get Bradshaw tied down to a new deal as well, because they both look on fire at the moment.
Definitely. No, I think I agree with you there. I think in particular first half, I think we've just done well at making Palace unsettled. Obviously, the atmosphere of a derby game, it definitely, you know, I think we got the better of it in the early doors. And obviously second half, I think they just moved the ball quicker for that 15-20 minute spell. We'll talk about Elise's first goal. I think, you know, you said in the build-up, was it Mateta's offside, Kai? But you can't take anything away from the finish from Elise. You know, that little bit of class. I think he was obviously at Reading before and they signed him for £7-8 million, Crystal Palace, which was more than our whole squad value put together, obviously, on transfer fees paid. And that little bit of moment of magic really paid off in the build-up, didn't it?
Oh, it was a class finish, wasn't it? I mean, he cuts inside, left foot. And then after that, after he scored, I'm not quite sure what happened, because they let him do it again, twice more. And I'm thinking, he's just buried one in the top corner. He hits the post after that. And then one flies just over the bar. Like, there was a period there where Elise could have had a hat-trick, and it was only for hit the post and him hitting just over. They didn't. But, yeah, he's a class player. And I think even it showed, even when we did push him on his right foot to go down the line, he puts in a good cross from Mateta to Ted Holm. And, I thought he's a good player. He was always a good player last year at Reading. I remember that ball he played through to Lucas Joao, I think it was, away at their place. And beat him 2-1. And he put the ball straight through the middle of the defence, and Joao really should score. But yeah, he's got his creative ability is second to none, and yeah, he's a quality player.
I think go on, Mickey.
What's his name? Oze, isn't it? Oze.
Elise.
Is that the one we've got the, what do you call it, the corner flag?
Yes.
I think he's handled himself fucking well for a youngster on a big event. We've seen players crumble under that sort of pressure, and he just shrugged it off. We've seen players the next day, nothing but fucking press releases after press release after press release, everything else about it. He doesn't seem to be sharing his tears. He's just cracked on, moved forward, and done what he needed to do on the pitch to silence the crowd, and fair play to him. Do you know what I mean? At the end of the day.
To be a bit of a cynic, would the two chances he obviously, you know, was instrumental with both goals, if it was Murray Wallace at left wing back, I just wonder whether defensively we might have been a bit more solid. I don't know if that's just me thinking that. You're both nodding to that there. Yeah. I think, you know, Malone, bless him, I think he's obviously lost his place the last few weeks with Murray Wallace taking that position, especially, you know, when we're trying to look for an upturn results. I think, you know, Malone, you get what you get going forward, and obviously set pieces, he takes a lot of the corners and stuff like that, and set piece plays in wide areas. But I do think if we had Murray Wallace there defending in a more natural position, I don't know if he would have got the same opportunities that Kai alluded to there, Mickey, where it's like within 5 minutes he could have had a hat-trick, couldn't he?
No, I totally agree with you. I think if Murray was there, I think he would have shut the door down just purely because of his you know, his size, his presence. You just, I think he's a lot,
he's more of a defender, isn't he? Malone's more of a wing-back, and Murray Wallace is more of a left-back per se, isn't he?
Yeah,
more solid defensively.
I mean, Murray is more of a traditional old-style footballer, and Malone is a bit more flash, isn't he? You know, he'll run at people, do a few tricks and try and get past them. But Murray is, happy birthday, by the way, to Murray Wallace today, and Phil Clark. Phil Clark's birthday as well today, mate. I think he's 63 today, old Phil, so yeah.
Nice, fair enough. there's a more important birthday next Monday, but I'll leave you to guessing who that is. But yeah, obviously, I agree. I think it's a shame, really, that Murray West wasn't available. Yes, you're right, Mickey. But yeah, I think if he was available on the day, I do personally think maybe it would have been different. I do also think, I'm not going to be critical of Rarick, because obviously the team was put out there to graft on the day, and from minute one to minute 90, that's all we got from the team. And obviously he was sent out to do that job, so to speak. But if we saw it happen 2, 3, 4 times, eventually Bennett came on, and kind of shore things up on that side of the pitch, and you didn't see Elise get another chance, really, Kai. Could there be an argument there? Maybe we should have brought him on sooner and kind of changed it, because we saw the threat straight away at the start of the second half where Palace were getting the ball to Gallagher, he was then playing out wide to Elise, and they were just moving it really quick. And then I think it kind of left Malone one-on-one, putting Bennett on the left. It worked, but maybe that could have been done before the second goal, maybe just playing devil's advocate there.
Yeah, potentially. And I think not only does Mason Bennett add, you know, he's quite good defending as well. But the fact that Mason Bennett's so quick, he's got good skills as well. He's got good pace and he's an all-round good player. He sort of pushes Palace back just by having him on, because, you know, they can't go sprinting forward, because if they lose it and Mason Bennett has it on the breakaway with Malone overlapping him, they're in big trouble. So I think it sort of pushed the Palace players back. And when they went 2-1 up, I think it could have gone either way. I mean, the fact they were 2-1 up, they potentially could have been content with that and just sat back and tried to see out the Millwall, you know, the Millwall storm after that. But I thought we deserved, and I thought we did enough to get back into the game and make it 2-2 personally. Obviously, Smith had that chance. Tyler, I think it was Benikovic who put that ball in for Dana Boateng that nearly got on the end of it. That would have been a dream goal, that, wouldn't it?
I can't look at Smith without laughing so hard to myself every time after the podcast, what he did with Millwall and that wall talk, where someone texted in and said, why is it that you run like an accountant? And every time now, you just can't fault it. He just, the only thing missing from him when he runs is that, you know, if there's any, you know, graphic video artists out there who want to do it for us, he just needs an umbrella and a briefcase in his hand while he runs. And it's as if his hips don't work. Do you know what I mean? He waddles rather than runs. And it's just, you just look and you see a young kid coming near him, like on Saturday, and you're just like, you ain't going to get near him. He's fucking going to run rings around you. I don't know, maybe that's just me.
But I find it funny when the ball went over the top for him, wasn't it? And he tried to close.
Always him as well.
Yeah, my granddad shouted out, go on, Smith, use your pace.
Yeah.
Like, it was just class. Like, you know, you just know that he's not going to beat him. But he always tries.
It's the way he runs.
Yeah, no, I love it. I've got a lot of time for Matt Smith.
I love him as a player.
I'd say, yeah.
And, you know, and if he does end up leaving and it's better for him, then great. You know, and if he ends up staying, then it is what it is. But and everyone who's listening to this now, next time you see him running, you'll go in your head and you'll go, oh, yeah. Especially those who haven't listened to the Millwall one, you will see what I mean. He does run like he's missing an umbrella. Yeah, it's all right. It's not as good as ours, but it's
Jack Whitehall was on there, wasn't it? That day they got Jack Whitehall on, didn't they?
Yeah, he was. Yeah. Funny, I think Matt Smith went to university with him, didn't he?
And yeah, played up front
with each other, didn't they? Wow. Weird sight to picture that one. But yeah, I mean, I do agree, obviously, about the Smith one is quite funny, but obviously he had that chance right at death, and we did huff and puff. I wanted to name drop Danny Mac though, chaps, because I thought he was a standout on our side. Just he loved the tackle, obviously, that we all know, and the derby occasion definitely didn't phase him there. But also, his ability on the ball going forward. And I think he just really done well to keep, you know, Eberieze, who, albeit came back from a long-term injury, he kept him really quiet, Kai, I thought, especially throughout the whole game. He ended up getting dragged off. I mean, I think Danny Mac just done himself no disfavour. What's the right word I'm looking for? He just basically played himself, I think.
He didn't embarrass himself, did he?
I think he was our standout on the day. I really do think it. Like, good on the tackle, good on the ball. Even a couple of times he got forward on the right-hand side, constantly looking to overlap. I think, you know, for me, he was a standout for us on Saturday.
Oh, he was excellent. He was fantastic, wasn't he?
Thing what I like, yeah, definitely. Thing what I like about Saturday is that when they lost the ball, they went straight back after it. If we play like we did Saturday for the rest of the season, I think potentially we could get points. No shadow of a doubt. But it's that inconsistency. If we can play like that and we've seen how well we play, and realistically, if we play against champion sides, we will beat them. Because I don't think a lot of them will handle, you know, Palace couldn't handle it. And the only time they could was for about a 15-minute spell. And when they show pure class. But are we going to see that pure class from clubs like Derby, Blackpool, et cetera, which I don't think we will, you know, Preston, et cetera, Swansea, I don't think we will. But, yeah, if we play like that every game going to the end of the season, then I think anything is open.
He just needs a full Den back in him, though, doesn't it? For them to rise to the game.
That's the problem, isn't it? But that's the problem, yeah.
What did you make of the atmosphere Saturday? I mean, I don't think it was our greatest derby atmosphere, no. To be honest. If I'm honest with you, I think it's probably because let's talk about Palace fans. The opposition fans weren't that great, to be honest, either, I don't think, on Saturday. I think I've definitely seen better atmospheres at the Den. I don't know if that's just me.
No, I agree with you. I think I totally agree with you. I said to you at the time, didn't I? I said it seemed very, in parts, quite dull compared to what you'd normally expect. I mean, don't get me wrong, it was still lively, especially if you're in, you know, block one or block 18, 19, then, you know, it was quite lively up that end. But where we were, it weren't there. I don't think the singing was in unison like it has been on big games before. But also, Palace fans just seemed to, once we scored that goal, they just seemed to drop until they scored. And then, you know, the pyrotechnics and, you know, nothing like letting a pyrotechnic off underneath a flag and nearly fucking killing yourself, is it? Do you know what I mean?
And all the fucking fireworks they're letting off as well, or the firecrackers. I don't get the hype at all whatsoever, to be honest, with this ultra thing. Like, and it's embarrassing because it's not like the whole stand's doing it. It's just a select few that just kind of think they're odd, basically.
The thing is, what gets me is that if that happened when we go away, they would be dealt with. Do you know what I mean? It'll be, listen, draw your neck in, mate. Don't be a fucking dick. And that's it. Like, the first time they've done it, they'll be drawn in. And then the second time, they'll be drawn in probably with a slap, and then they wouldn't do it a third time. But these are, like, living off this image. And you know damn well that if they ever get in Europe and actually go to a proper ultra side where, you know, if they get a Turkey draw or something like that, or a proper Italian draw, they would be fucking in bits. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? They're no bigger in the football fan status than Dulwich Hamlet fans. They're not a scary group. I mean, they asked for a police escort. They got one. They come through Silwood. There's a video I posted on TikTok where there's a guy, and it's on Twitter. We retweeted on Twitter, where they're being led through more coppers than ultras. And there's a geezer laughing his head off at, you know, how threatening are you when, you know, people are laughing at you? And also, you know, they're posting pictures what look intimidating. And then all of a sudden, if you go to the wide angle picture, they're just a bunch of fucking, there's about 50, 60 ultras and about 150 old Bill. And you just think, really? Is that 50, 60 of us, there'd be fucking 500 old Bill. Do you know what I mean? We'd probably be put on a coach and fucking ship somewhere. But it's I don't know, mate. It is what it is. But I go back to what we were saying, Finger. I don't want any criticism. And I don't want you to take it as criticism if any of Billy's family or whatever listening, but I just think that, you know, whether it is the yellow card or whatnot, but I just think that that affected his game on Saturday. Because normally, fucking superb player.
I think it was Savills going off injured as well. Because I think Keith, bless him, I think he's obviously got his place to play at times. But what Savile and Mitchell kind of struck up in the last few games together, especially that first half, just... they controlled the midfields, and obviously, bear in mind, you know, Palace's midfield is not necessarily star-studded, but it's worth some money and it's gold there. Obviously, you've got the Chelsea loanee, Conor Gallagher there. There's some good players in that midfield for Palace, and I think the pair of them kept them really quiet. And then obviously, Savile went off injured, I think, first 3 or 4 minutes in the second half. Keith comes on, and he's not really got the pace to kick out of the game, I felt like, and especially when Palace moved the ball quite quick as they were. Just one thing led to another, I think, for him on the day. But I think that's kind of what contributed to Mitchell's performance, especially in the second half. But he'll learn from his experience because, you know, he's 20 years old. He'll come back from it. And I think, you know, it's good to see Bury get on. I thought he was excited on the right-hand side when he came on. A few opportunities where he got down there, just took his man on. I call for it every time when I see a winger in the wide areas, and you don't always get it from a Millwall team sometimes. But every time Bury took a man on, his instinct is to take him on and get a ball in the box. And that is a Millwall winger. What you should see.
And at one point, he got past about 4 or 5 players, didn't he?
Yeah, he's quick as well. The thing is, though, it's obviously a double-edged sword, but you want him to take the man and put the ball in the box, but you don't necessarily know what the end product is going to be at the end of it there, because it could be Rosehead or it could be, you know, the life ball in the box. Almost Paul Eiffel-esque. There you go, I'll say it. Like, takes his man on, then it could go Rosehead. Like, but it's the kind of unpredictable nature of it that makes it exciting to watch. And I think, obviously, he's muted to go back to Hartlepool, but if, you know, if transfers that we'll talk about in the second part go a certain way, I wouldn't be disheartened to see Tyler Bury get a run of games, because what we've got to lose, you know, we're talking about the excitement level at the ends, and, you know, Nana Boateng on the pitch, Bury on the pitch, Mitchell, Danny Mack, 4 mil young bloods in there. That's all we want to see as fans. And, you know, at the end of the game, obviously we'll talk about, you know, the fans, everyone gave him an ovation at the end, didn't they? I think we kind of noticed the commitment that they put in on Saturday. And in the end, Kai, you know, we didn't get the result we wanted. But as fans, that's all you can ask for, I think, from Millwall side.
And yeah, everyone stayed.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, and I was speaking to one of our Palace mates after the game. He said to me, he said in the Palace end at half time, we were questioning how we were more than 1-0 down, because obviously Bennett had a good effort, had a good chance, Savile had a good chance, and he said that, you know, we honestly thought it would have been more fair if we were 2-0 down. So he said he was complimentary of the Millwall side on Saturday. He was really impressed with our performance, our work rate, everything about Millwall. He said, you know, 10-minute spells, we've said, you know, got Palace over the line, but other than that, he said, you know, Millwall were largely the better side, which I absolutely agree with. So it was nice to get a little bit of credit from the opposition fans, but you often don't get there in games like that.
No, definitely, I have to agree. I think that's probably all she wrote for Saturday's game. I think, I don't know, who did Chris Price get in the next round of the cup, Kai? Did you see that?
Hartlepool,
that's it, at home, wasn't it, as well?
Yeah, it's a shame.
So we're not missing much then, are we? Let's be honest.
It's a shame, really, that what's his name, Bury, is cup tied now, because it would have been great for him to go back to Hartlepool, yeah, and be able to get a game there and score the winner, just to really stick it, wouldn't it? That'd be great, but yeah.
Yeah, no, we're not missing much from it, and obviously a cup run's always nice, but in a weird way, I think if you look at our form for the last 10 games, we've only won 3 in the league, and I don't want to be Debbie Downer, but obviously the form's been a bit patchy, up and down. January window's here now. We'll talk about that in part 2. But it's quite clear that there needs to be improvements, but also a bit of consistency in the side. And maybe a distraction of the cup might have kind of deterred that a bit more. So I think maybe now we can focus on that and kick on, Mickey.
Yeah, no, look, I agree. I think I think I'd rather not be in the cup. Yeah, it's great to be in the cup, the money, everything else. But let's be honest, I'd rather concentrate and see if we can make a run for it, especially after seeing the performance we gave on Saturday. Don't get me wrong, if we had won that, then yeah, great. You know, we're still in the cup. You know, we would have got Hartlepool or someone else and probably got spanked. But I think it's, I'd rather concentrate and see if we can make a last, you know, mean-hearted push towards getting something good this season, rather than, you know, focus on the cup and fucking ruin our league positioning.
Definitely. I think we've probably spoke to death about that game anyway from Saturday. Good day out, nonetheless. Wasn't the result we wanted, but the team done us justice anyway. Go on, Mickey.
Strings, but we'll talk about that in part 2.
You love the strings, don't you? That guy. We'll wrap it up anyway. God, we'll leave you to wind yourself up.
That's about
up.
The atmosphere, so yeah. But we'll talk about that in part 2.
We'll leave you to wind yourself up, and then we'll go into part 2 now, and we'll hear all about that. So, back shortly. Right, welcome to the second part of the show. As mentioned, we're going to talk about general misc of things, I suppose. Mickey wants to talk about the fans at the game on Saturday. Do you want to go first, Mickey? What did you make of your experience in block 37 in the sunny Cumber Lane on Saturday?
Mate, they're full of strings. mate, that geezer in front of us, who the fuck was that?
Yeah.
There was a funny-looking geezer, right? Rucksack on his back, fucking weird trainers, weird jacket, looked foreign, continental or so, possibly Italian journalist or something, taking couple of pictures of the crowd at weird intervals, taking pictures of the Palace player when he was on the floor, a couple of other bits and pieces. He was being monitored, I must say, by about 8 of us standing around him, not just the pods we were with, but other pods as well. And then he disappeared and never come back. There was, when we walked in, there was people sitting in our seats, and Omar done the old, "What the fuck are you doing? Move."
The only thing with that, right, is because it's unreserved seating always in my day, but that's where I sit. That's my spot. Yeah. Doesn't matter. I've sat there for years. That's where I plot up. So I don't mind it because it's where you want to sit. But, you know, if I don't know the face either, I'm going to tell you to get up and get out of my spot.
That was the thing. Was that not the thing on Saturday, that we walked all the way from obviously the ground, and we walked all the way up top of Ilderton Road towards the blue? You walked, obviously, where you went, and I cut through the estate. I didn't recognise anyone, really. And normally, you see loads. Normally, it's like, "Hello, mate, you're all right, blah, blah, blah." You saw everyone out in their fucking... Everyone seemed to have come out in their Stone Island fucking woolly hats and Stone Island jackets and jumpers and everything else.
Get the badge in.
Yeah, really. and it was like... I don't know, mate. It was just... One of them. I mean, I saw some fella, it was quite funny. I saw some fella and I come home I went, fucking hell, there was some fella in front of me at the ticket stand wearing like these tracksuit bottoms, what looked like they were covered in fucking shit, paint and all that lot. And my missus went, I was over Bluewater the other day and I said the same thing about someone wearing those sort of trousers. And my girl went, oh no, they're designer. Looked them up online. They're like fucking £400 or £500 a pair of trousers upwards just to have them fucking stained. And you're like, mate, really?
It's funny, right? Because whenever you talk to or whoever, like, you kind of speak about the fans, everyone's concerned that we've not got a new generation of fans coming through. And to be honest, like, the majority of people I saw sat there are all youngish people. There's not many old school fans there. And I don't know if that's maybe to do with COVID. A lot of old people have been kind of turned away and don't want to necessarily maybe meet the requirements, or maybe they're scared to go to the games because obviously that fear of getting COVID and people's health being impacted. But I do think, like, there is a lot of youngish fans coming through now.
But are they Millwall fans?
Strings. This is it. Well,
are they Millwall? I think
but these are the people that turn up though when it's the big games, you know what I mean? So I don't think there is a problem.
I mean, what's his name? That fucking knobhead off YouTube was there as well, wasn't he? The Bolton fan.
Fogden. He was there.
And it's like,
he made a very fair video about Millwall, by the way. I think it could have been easy for him to jump on the views of, you know, what's gone on around in the media. He didn't criticise the fans or anything with his dads. And I don't really watch his content, but I did watch that vlog. And I thought actually kind of they embraced the match day experience of Millwall, which he could have easily have come out and said, oh, this happened, and get the views and the clickbait titles. Instead, it was just experiencing the match day as a purist football fan, which I thought was quite a good touch from them, to be honest.
I've not watched it. I probably will watch it at some point. But
there you go. I watched it whilst hungover yesterday, and I thought it was a good video and fair.
I mean, I'll have a look at it and make thingy, but I still think, you know, for a Bolton fan just to be going all over and all that, look, I understand he makes a lot of money from his channel and that's what drives his content. But, I just felt that there was too many people who wanted to be there because potential of what was going to happen rather than probably going there for the football. Mm-hmm. People were thinking that there was going to be mass trouble, mass. And you know, let's be honest, the old Bill, when we walked out and we walked across the Alderton Road before we went where we went, they were fucking provoking it. I mean, how the fuck can you really let all the Millwall fans out walking up Zampa Road when Zampa Road's not that wide to suddenly have best part of 15,000 fans, you know, walking towards that way or up Stockholm, split it down the middle, say 7,000 fans walking up there. And the old Bill decide, oh, we're going to load up the street now with fucking police vans. You had a police van turning around an Alderton Road, what basically was nearly running people over as it was trying to turn around and blocking the whole of the fucking traffic and then lining up Zampa Road. It's just madness. It just doesn't make any sense at all, apart from just trying to be a wanker and provoke trouble for no reason.
There was drones, actually, where we walked back. It was like, you know, parallel to the train, near the flats where the old den used to be. We walk up there normally. Literally no one walks up there. Maybe 100 people walk up there per game, maybe if that, at all different times. Obviously, on the way back, it's a little bit busier. But we walk in there. We're probably there about an hour and a half before kickoff. And we're walking down the bit parallel to the train line.
And Carriage way, you mean?
Yeah, no. Other way, you know where the old den is?
Oh, yeah.
It's the old den, you know, that little walkway where there's grass, there's a big mound and stuff.
Oh, yeah, I know.
So there was a security presence there was two vans, and then it said bat drones are being used or something. It was something weird, like there was people there. It looked security-like, so we assumed it was, but we've never seen that before.
Yeah, but I think the police were ready for it, weren't they, Saturday? But Palace fans, I don't know, were hiding, weren't they? So there you go. They were hiding behind the escorts, as always. So there we go. We spoke about the ultras a little bit there. To change the topic a little bit, chaps, London News Online, a friend of the show, Richard Cowley, put a little article out earlier today mentioning that Millwall have had bids rejected for Derby's Louis Sibley, Fortuna Sittard's Zion Fleming, who I understand to be both attacking midfielders, Kai, I think. I could be wrong. But they're obviously players that are, you know, we know Sibley quite well for his hat-trick against us at the Den at the start of lockdown in 2020. But interesting targets there, I think, that, you know, maybe kind of give an indication of where we're looking to strengthen from this window.
No, they're both good players. Sibley, I feel like, has potential, and I think that's potentially why Millwall are going after him. because of the fact that, you know, he's only young. He's done, he did well against us three years ago now. Obviously, hasn't done an awful lot since then, but, you know, with him being so young, there's time to be, you know, be able to grow that potential. And that, and Fleming is one that I've seen a lot of, actually, about on Twitter, about how good he is. Forrest were linked with him last year, so with Huddersfield. And we were offered the chance to sign him, I think, as a report said last in August or something, that we could match the expectation of value. So I know he's a good player. If you watch his highlight reel, he looks a really good player, can finish with both feet, good in the air as well, and it looks like a really good attacking midfielder. So they're the right sort of players, I feel like, that we should be going after. And let's hope we can get them.
Mickey, there seems to be a common theme going on. Another player from a European country as well being linked. But also there's an age range for all these players where it looks like we're trying to develop for the future as well, but also players that can maybe make an impact now. But I suppose there is a bit to be read there that, you know, 2 weeks in a row, there's two European signings potentially linked with the club. I suppose there is a real intent there from the club to try and get some value abroad from away from the UK.
Yeah, and I think you're probably going to be able to get them for cheaper money. And if you know the agent, then it could be a benefit. if you know the agent, and you'll probably be able to get it slightly cheaper than what you would with the UK. I think, yeah. And it's something what we banged on about for years and years, why we never scouted in Europe. Like the Belgian teams, the French lower leagues, the German Bundesliga lower league, because there are some class players there who could really do well in the Championship. And even if you get them fairly cheap and they perform well and they get snapped up by a Prem, you're just gonna make money out of them.
Like Brentford. Once
yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like Brentford. But that's what we've got to do. How else are we making money as a club? We're not. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the way to make money is buy players cheap, develop them, get them in the spotlight and hope, get a couple of years out of them, and then hope that going forward, the Prem suddenly likes them and snaps them up for double or triple what you paid.
Or you're in the Prem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you let their contract run down and, you know, you get a sub fee for them. Let's talk about that one, because obviously we'll keep talking about it. I'm sure we will do throughout January. But again, Forrest have rumoured to be making another bid for Jed Wallace, if I read correctly. I think if we're getting linked to all these attacking players, creative players,
1.5, isn't it?
Yeah, but if we're getting linked to all these creative players, and he also didn't play Saturday when he supposedly trained twice last week in the lead up to the game, and you know Forrest won their cup game, and we got Forrest on Saturday, I think he's going up to Forrest's window, Jed Wallace. I don't know if that's just me being a bit of a cynic. But I think he's going to leave this window, chaps. I don't know what you both think. Go on, Kai, first. I think he's going this window.
It feels like the nightmare, but could potentially become the reality quite soon, doesn't it? So, I'd be glad to see Jed. I know Mickey's laughing at me there, but like this, Jed Wallace is one of the best players I've seen at Millwall. You know,
it's not a legend though.
No, but he's going to be a big miss, isn't he?
He's a good player.
Is he going to see life without him as well?
Is he going to be a big miss? Look at where we've been playing recently. Yeah, but look how we've started to be playing recently. And if we get a couple of these good attacking midfielders in, are we really going to miss? Is it going to be for the next season or so, we're actually going to miss him really badly? Or is it that actually he's gone, we've got a replacement who's better, and hey-ho, off we go again?
Life moves on after Jed. I agree with that. But what was the first thing I said to you on Saturday, walking out of the game on Saturday? I think if Jed was available and an option on Saturday, albeit from the bench or start the game,
he would have changed. I think
we have more of a creative output on Saturday if Jed's playing. I think that because he is our talisman. He is the player that makes things happen for us on more than one occasion in the past. But I do think life moves on without him. And I think we're kind of consigned to it now. Whether it happens now or we need a free transfer, we know it's going to happen. I think the contract's not going to get... nothing's going to get magically done unless it's a miracle. And I don't know, maybe he's options elsewhere. Yeah, or maybe his options elsewhere don't materialise how it sounds. Maybe then it might sign it. But if I was 50-50 at the start of the season, I'm probably about 10% hopeful that happens now. Let's be honest.
Yeah, I'll throw a question to both of you to answer. Why Forrest? because
I don't think I think
Forest is no better than us.
I reckon he can probably get more money at Forest because
okay,
you know, they have bigger gates, more shirt sales. They probably have more money to pay him wage wise. I agree with you. It's a big sideways step, and if anything, it does show purely what his intentions are in a weird way.
They're not Premiership class, are they?
I think they're more likely at the moment than us, I'll be honest. I think their squad is not as good as ours. I think they've got a few good players, but they're also trying to strengthen and they're trying to improve. And they probably have more financial backing than we do to maybe
try. They outplayed Arsenal last night, so.
Yeah, exactly. Good. So, yeah, like, but under Steve Cooper, he's a young English manager, done well at Swansea. And since since he's gone in, I think they're top two, maybe top three for form. So they're definitely going in the right direction, whereas we're kind of stagnating where we are mid-table. I do think it's a sideways step completely, and I do think it shows not disloyalty, but I think it shows that he's not interested in staying at Millwall and he's more interested in the fresh change, even if it means going to Nottingham Forest in the Championship.
I'd be surprised if a Premiership doesn't come in for him, unless, with his ability, what he has, I am surprised that it's only teams like Forest what are bidding for him at the minute. You would have thought, you would have thought, lower Premiership teams like Leeds, etc., would potentially put an offer in to try and take him because he might be able to do something for him in the Prem, unless they don't think he's got the level to play in the Premiership.
Or if they're all just waiting to see what happens, maybe waiting for the situation to play out a bit more. I think the second that it wouldn't surprise me if Nottingham Forest get a bid accepted. I suspect it'd be after our game at the weekend against them. It wouldn't surprise me then if you got more clubs throwing their hat into the ring going, we'll match it and then talk to the player. I think that's probably something that will happen. But yeah, I think it's a shame, really. It's gone this way. But I think there definitely has to be something read into the fact that he didn't play at the weekend, to be honest, especially if he did train twice this week. You could say you're saving him and you want him to be fit to play against Forest and the league's the priority. But Palace at home in the cup, what it meant to the fans as well, to see him out there, I think we'd had a better chance.
Wouldn't you have just brought him on, or at least put him on the bench and possibly brought him on just to say, well, if you go, mate, you're not going to play in a cup for them.
It's a mess of a situation, though. All the mixed signals that are coming out, 1 minute he's injured and the quad injury's taken a while to come back. Then there's a tweet, I think on Thursday evening, that he's trained twice this week and he's available for selection. Then he's not in the squad Saturday. There is definitely a story that's not being told to us. Why would it be told to us anyway? But I think there is definitely more to it than meets the eye, to be honest. But there you go. Is there anything else you chaps want to put into this show before we wrap up today anyway, guys?
Daniel Ballard.
Okay, yeah, Ballard. He's back in contention and hopefully from February, right? Is that right, Kai?
Yeah, I think he said, the report said earlier that I think it was early February, he's basically back in training, I think I read, which is huge news, isn't it? That's a really good news. Missed him.
Exciting news.
Yeah, it'll be good to have him back.
Definitely. Go on, Mickey. You wanted to put something else in?
Recast.
Okay.
We've done it. I've done it today. And watched the Charlton game. It was footage is all right, same as it always is. But what I liked about it was I brought some. We didn't have a look because when you sign on, you only get a little bit. So I'll be honest with it. I brought a few tokens earlier, about £5 worth, and it took me down to 600 I had in total with that, and it took me down to about 350 when I bought the game for 250 credits. I shared it on the pod, and just said, look, I'm watching this. And I basically earned back, so it cost me 250 to watch. In theory, 250 credits is 250. And I got £1.12, 150, 212, 260, 3, 4. I got about 400 credits, 250, 3, 4, 412 credits back. By sharing the link, what is on the account. I posted that and said, look, I'm watching it. A couple of people joined up, and them joining up, recast, give me give me a fee. What's there? You know, it's, I think it's 50 credits or whatever it is per one. And then that all adds up. And they give you a fee for the first person, give you a fee, and then it goes up. So what I'm saying is that I don't necessarily agree with everything what Millwall's doing around Recast, but I think that if I'm earning money, as in I'm earning credits through sharing a link and people clicking on it, or through WhatsApp, whatever it is, you share a link, and the club's getting money, then I think it's not a bad system, potentially. I don't agree with how Millwall's possibly doing all the content at the minute, because I think there's possibly a large section of our fan base who only uses websites and only knows their way around a website, you know, the older generation, and possibly not really with apps and registering and everything else like that. I don't agree with a week and a half ago or a week ago, you could watch the manager's interview on the website or on the Twitter account, and now all of a sudden you have to pay for it. I think there should be something done there, whether or not they should say Recast for a day or 2 days and then over. Personally, I think games, if it means that we can watch the under-18s, the under-23s, you know, the under-17s, etc., and see a lot more of the youth players coming through, I think that's fantastic. If we can see a lot of old games again coming on there, that's great. We all know that clubs are looking for different ways of making income, and YouTube really isn't there to earn you lots and lots of money unless you've got big numbers. You know, we all know that. We know what YouTube's about. There's lots and lots of conditions. And even for football clubs, I don't think there's a lot there for them. Plus, you're putting your content out online, and it is what it is. I suppose it's a bit hard to police. But I paid £2.50 to watch a game today, and I made nearly double that back. So for the first time I watched it, I'm pretty happy with my experience. And many thanks to the people who clicked on the link and joined up. And again, do the same. Just forward it out to a pal, forward the link out, what you've got, not my link, your link, out to people, and go. Because every time you click, I get money. I think the club gets money. And every time you do it, it tells you that you're supporting the club. And in current terms, I think it can be a good thing, really. I don't know what money they make. I don't know anything else. But I'm happy with what I made. I got my money back for, you know, and more for watching it, for a couple of people sharing the link.
But then I suppose because we've got the account, the Twitter account, that's why you get the exposure for people to click on the link. So I suppose, like you say, you share it with friends or whatever. But
you've got
would an average Joe get the same experience as you did?
Well, why not? You've got WhatsApp groups. You've got, you know, everyone's going to be in a WhatsApp group with Millwall fan or a couple of Millwall fan. You only need a couple of people to come back and it's pay. I mean, if you watch something for 30 credits and you forward that, you only need one person to fucking join up. Do you know what I mean? You can get someone in your family to join up and then, you know, they do the same. I think, you know, there's potential. Mm-hmm. You know, is it going to be, you know, massive going forward? I've got no idea. But my personal experience of it today, I paid and I've earned that back. Yeah, okay, fine. You know, we've got the benefit of the pod account. Yeah, okay, you know, we've worked hard and we've got a lot of followers on there, but no one needed to click on it. Do you know what I mean? People clicked on it because they wanted to watch it. That, you know, all I was doing was sharing a link, what people clicked and joined. And it worked for me, but I got my money back for paying for it, and I can watch it again. And I got to see, you know, Lovelace score. I got to see us get fucking throw a 2-0 advantage away and lose 3-2, which is typical Millwall style-esque, but it didn't cost me anything in the long run. So it's got to be a good idea rather than, you know, and I didn't have to watch any adverts. Do you know what I mean? Unlike YouTube, where you watch stuff, especially nowadays, you get loads and loads of adverts. And by posting the live footage on there, you don't really make any revenue, do you? So I don't know what the club makes. Hopefully, you know, they make good money out of this and it's a good business opportunity for them going forward. But personally, for me, I was quite satisfied with my first thing. I have got little niggles, as I said, and you have. about the player interviews after the match, the manager interviews, etc. I think maybe Millwall needs to look at how they're putting content out, because I think they choose what they want to do with content. I'm not sure. But personally, that's the only thing I've got. Got no issue with the game side of it.
No, definitely.
But yeah. Yeah.
Interesting insight, nonetheless. No, interesting insight, nonetheless. And obviously, download Recast if you haven't got it already and see what it's like. I think, yeah, interesting. I think, obviously, if the club gain out of it, then it's, you know, a support, I suppose, in any way we can. So, right. Anything else you want to put into the show, Mickey or Kai?
That's it, isn't it, really?
I think we've ran our course. If you're new around here, obviously, guys, be sure to subscribe on YouTube, subscribe on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. It helps out a lot just to bump up the charts a bit more. If you're new around here, obviously, like the video, leave a comment, let us know what you thought of this pod. Any interaction is always greatly appreciated. Check us out on Twitter, at ThatMillPod. We'll be back later in the week for a preview on all things Nottingham Forest. So thanks for watching, guys, and see you soon.